Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. We'll hear a panel discussion on homeless youth, which took place following a screening of the 2007 film Chop Shop, directed by Ramin Bahrani. This event was co-sponsored by the Metro Area Continuum of Care for the Homeless Youth Task Force. The film tells the story of Alejandro, a tough and ambitious Latino street orphan on the verge of adolescence, who lives and works in an auto body repair shop in a sprawling junkyard on the outskirts of Queens, New York. In this chaotic world of adults, young Alejandro struggles to make a better life for himself and his 16-year-old sister, Isamar. The members of the panel will be Shelley Sides, Youth Street Outreach Coordinator for Youth Emergency Services, Nancy Oberst, Director of Elementary Education for the Omaha Public Schools, Marianne Borgeson, Douglas County Commissioner, Eric Steck, Title I Program Resource Facilitator for OPS, and Allison Martin, a formerly homeless youth. The moderator will be Katie Rishbakit, Program Manager for Campfire USA. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday evening, November 6, 2008, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, Youth Emergency Services, the Douglas County Board, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Katie Rishbakit.
On behalf of Matches Youth Task Force, we really appreciate you all coming out here tonight. This has definitely been a labor of love, and lots of hard work and energy has gone into this event. Just briefly, for those who aren't familiar with the Youth Task Force, we are a group of individuals and organizations who either serve homeless youth in what we do daily, or we're people who advocate for homeless youth with the ultimate goal of reducing, if not eliminating, homelessness in our community. So November being Homeless Awareness Month, we especially appreciate you all coming out for that. Before we start the show, I'd like to introduce Dr. John McKeel, superintendent with Omaha Public Schools, to say a few words.
Katie, thank you. Ms. Jacobson, thank you for hosting this evening. On behalf of the school district, we're here this evening in partnership with the agencies and the members and the individuals who are dedicated to the elimination of homelessness for young people. In our community, we're impacted in one school district. Last year, it was approximately 500 young people were homeless. This year, the number continues to grow, and we anticipate, given the realities that our community and our nation faces, that that's going to increase. We also know that there's no single agency, no single individual alone can address this issue, but collectively, we can create an awareness and an understanding and begin the solution and the problem solving. And thank you for your commitment to eliminate homelessness on behalf of young people and the impact that it has on a community and families. Again, Katie, thanks for your interest, support, and encouragement.
Okay, thank you all for sticking around. Hopefully you enjoyed the movie. Definitely very heavy material covered in that movie, but I think, unfortunately, I think it's a harsh reality for what some youth are experiencing on the streets. While the panel is getting water and getting set up, I want to mention, I think that we would be mistaken not to mention that it's very, very difficult to get accurate statistics and data regarding the number of homeless youth on any given night. That's for multiple reasons, one being the varying definitions of youth homelessness. Another reason is a term that we call couch surfing, which involves youth sleeping on the couch or staying with other people or families being housed by friends and family members, making it more difficult to get an accurate count. And the last reason, and not necessarily the final reason, but the last reason being it's very difficult to have a centralized yet confidential manner in which to a database, so to speak, in which to measure the services that are being accessed by families of homeless youth. MATCH, which I didn't mention earlier, stands for Metro Area Continuum of Care for Homeless, in August did a point-in-time count, which means exactly that. It's that specific point in time. In August, there were 310 homeless individuals and families, some of whom we know are children. That's, again, only one night's worth, and that therefore we can't assure that's necessarily the most out there. That's probably a minimal number. That said, I want to do a brief introduction. I was going to do bios, and I thought, you know, people are best at introducing themselves and in explaining their background. So I'll briefly, their names are in front of them in case you have questions and would like to address them by name. That's perfectly fine. But I'll start right. Well, I'm going to start and go around this way, actually. We've got Shelley Sides, who is here from Youth Emergency Services. Nancy Oberst, who is with Omaha Public Schools. We're fortunate to have Douglas County Commissioner Mary Ann Borgeson with us tonight. And we welcome Allison Martin, who is going to share her personal experience with homelessness. And then we're fortunate to have Eric Steck from Omaha Public Schools, too, who is a homeless liaison, and he'll be able to speak on behalf of Title I and what they're doing with some of the youth. The way we'll work the panel, in the interest of time, is we'll begin with one planned question, and then actually a couple planned questions. Then we'll open it up for more of an open forum. You'll see there are two mics down here at the front, and you're welcome to ask one question for all the panel members or to address a particular panel member, and then we'll close with a final question. So the first question is, I want to give everybody an opportunity, and Allison, I'll probably start with you, to share why you're here, why largely it's because we invited you to be here, but I would love each of you to share, starting with you, Allison, your experience and how you came here tonight.
Well, I started going to the Yes House when I was homeless, I think about 3 years ago, and Shelley walked up to me and asked me to come and give in my personal first-person input as far as the movie goes and how accurate it is.
Great. Thank you very much, Allison. Commissioner Borgeson.
And tonight I was also asked to be on the panel, and this is a good experience for me as a county commissioner because we actually see our youth either through our youth detention center or through our juvenile assessment center. So while we don't necessarily provide services to the homeless, our youth we see actually have a lot of characteristics of the homeless. Once they're in our youth center, we do provide them with their education, their physical, and their emotional needs, and work actually real close with a lot of people that are probably providers in this room tonight. But this experience that I've had being a part of MATCH and being a part of the task forces have given me as a county commissioner an opportunity to see whether or not what we do for our youth in the county, if we should be doing things differently, if we should be working more closely at the prevention side, actually, or just what it is. So for me, this is a good educational piece, but also to talk a little bit more, if there are any other questions, about what the role of the county is in providing services to our youth.
Thank you, Commissioner Borgeson. Nancy.
This is very moving, I guess, for me tonight, having been a principal in many schools and having sort of face-to-face with families and children in crisis and how difficult it is for them on a daily basis to come into a different setting and feel like they're living a different life once they walk through the door of the school, that they you know, they're not able to be children, really. I think we saw that tonight. They are asked to be grown-ups and fend for themselves and take care of adults sometimes. And so I think when you frame the life of a child in a school setting, they are often on a bit of an emotional roller coaster. They're often worried and hypervigilant and frustrated and always sort of watching the door or watching the next thing to happen because they have no control and they're always worried and wondering what might happen next. And so through the schools and through the work that we have tried to do, the Omaha Public Schools, I think, has met a big challenge in trying to keep the children in their schools. Eric can talk more about that because he's sort of frontline with setting all that up. But as a principal, I believe that The school can be sometimes the anchor point for children. It can be the one consistent piece for them, can be the attachment that they need during a difficult time. And I've seen the power in that and the good that's been done by many, many people in that way.
Great. Thank you, Nancy. Shelley?
I work with Youth Emergency Services, and I work with homeless and at-risk youth on a daily basis. So I kind of have a better understanding of what they're going through, what their life situations are. I'm here tonight to maybe gain patience when working with those youth. I don't spend the night with them, so I don't know what exactly goes on at nighttime for them. And so this was a great understanding of once our facilities close, what they go through.
Eric, do you want to expand upon what Nancy mentioned?
I work as for the Omaha Public Schools as the homeless liaison. And in case you're wondering, that is not a new position. I get that question a lot. It is recently, 2.5 years ago, was designated as one person doing that position, shared with some responsibilities in the Title I office. That is dictated by a federal law that many of you may have never heard before. Hopefully after tonight you will keep it with you. And that is the McKinney-Vento Homeless Education Assistance Act. That law essentially governs what school districts must do for students who are experiencing homelessness, and it defines who they are. So her point earlier about different definitions is extremely vital to me in my daily work, because it is a definition of youth who are homeless that, thank God, is much broader than a HUD definition. It includes children who are living, or families who are living with other families, and other circumstances. I don't want to get into that too much right now, but it is bigger. And so our responsibility as a school community and as a community with schools in them is much bigger for how we serve those kids and educate those kids. And it is our charge, both legally and morally, I would say, to help those youth keep connected with their school. And just a thought about Alejandro there. I was thinking in the back of my mind as the issues of literacy were being presented and struggling with that, and you know, his comment of, you know, this is going to get me to school today if you buy my candy, is somewhere there is a school that let him slip through. And there are folks, or are supposed to be folks, doing the same thing that I do in every school district. That is a federal mandate. So we can chew on that a little later, too. So,
thanks, Eric. The next question isn't for any one person in particular, but hopefully one or more of you will jump in on it. But I'd like to know your initial reaction to the movie. Share with the audience, if you would. Is it realistic, either in your experience or with the youth you've worked with? What do you think about that?
I thought it was quite accurate. You said it was pretty heavy stuff. From my personal experience and the experience of a lot of the people I know who have gone through the same thing, I would say it was a more light version of the real situation. I would add a lot more violence and rape to make it more accurate, and that's the type of stuff I saw on a daily basis sleeping under the 84th Street Bridge.
Wow. Thanks, Allison. Nancy, Shelley, do you have anything? I know you've both worked directly with youth.
I think I saw the strength in Ali that I saw in many kids who were trying desperately every day to get by and to, in some cases, provide things for themselves and their siblings, always looking out for each other. And usually it was the oldest child that would be, you know, herding the other ones together, waiting to see who might be picking them up before, you know, Eric could set up transportation, or waiting to hear where they were supposed to go. But there was always, I think, a sense that they were taking care of themselves in a way that you see children in poverty do often, but maybe at that heightened level. And at the point at which I think you saw him maybe give up some hope, you know, when it didn't seem to be working out with the van, you know, you see that feeling in children sometimes. And his response, you know, was anger and violence a bit. But that then the resurgence of the hope again, I guess, was what really, you know, we saw repeatedly that kids are so resilient, and we as adults, we get something from that because we sometimes despair more readily than children do. So I think it was very realistic.
I thought it was very realistic as well. And what Allison is going off of is there's more violence and rape that's going on. And I totally agree with that. We see that on a daily basis with some of our kids as well. We also see that, you know, some kids may not be able to get jobs because, you know, they're lacking identification. So they're getting any jobs that they can, and they are getting ripped off and, you know, maybe not even buying the stuff that they need. You know, like he bought his sister a brand new pair of shoes. And, you know, we see that a lot, you know, kids just, you know, blowing their money on stuff that they really don't even need as well.
Thank you all. I'd like to open it up for an open forum. If there are people who have questions, there's two microphones here. If that's not in your interest, we certainly have more planned questions we can go on with. And perhaps I'll do that. If you do have a question, please do come down to the mic and remember to speak into the mic, I've been told.
First of all, I wanted to applaud everyone who stayed. All of you that stayed, thank you. You really care. And I know that all of you worked hard for this. I wanted to kind of clarify the numbers. You said that like there's 300, and Dr. McKeel said 500. I mean, that varies all the time, or okay. And then also wanted to let you guys know that in terms of any of the Native American youth, please exchange card or information because we need to be in touch, you know, with this. I just wanted to applaud each and every one of you for doing all of this. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to see the film also. And I wanted to ask, I guess, Nancy, what is the school system doing? How does the school go about keeping the kids from falling through the cracks? And then we had another question too from back there. How did Allison become homeless? Those are the two. Thank you.
Do you want to go first? When I was 14, my family was going through a divorce and had to move up to Omaha, and I was rendered into the state's care as a ward of the state. They oftentimes were not able to supply me with a foster home, so I did spend a lot of time on the streets. When I turned 18, they released me without any housing, and I had to sell everything I had to make it up here to Omaha, where I had to spend a lot of time bouncing from couch to couch and couch surfing. And me and one of my best friends, which is here, have spent time under a bridge near 84th Street, getting up every day, walking to work, and it's been a constant struggle to get up off the streets, but luckily, finally, I got a place the third of this month.
I will just talk a little bit about what it is like on the inside of the school, and Eric maybe can help with the bigger picture. But inside the school, sometimes you find out that someone is now homeless in very different ways. Usually younger kids sometimes will just kind of mention it, and then a thoughtful adult will sometimes take that information and try to explore perhaps what's going on. Sometimes we know that they're in a shelter because they've come on a van, and it's sometimes more direct than other times. But the thing that I guess I would mention about this is families sometimes would come in and let us know that they had been evicted or locked out or found themselves no longer to be able to stay where they had been. And when that happens, schools have money that has been given by a donor for emergency situations, and sometimes they can intercede and help in small ways, clothing and shoes, and also giving counsel and referrals. And Eric can talk more about that. But it's really the inside of the school. If they're a climate that knows the children and cares for the children, and the kids see it as a place to tell and to seek more help, and then once you establish that they're, you know, in some jeopardy in terms of where they're living, that people are again vigilant and caring and provide that safety for when it feels like they can't really take anymore. And I think that our counseling services, every elementary school has a counselor, and we have access to social workers and a great network of people who are willing to help. But the school has to be the steady. It has to be the place that really knows the students and the family. And it's our job to establish that relationship to all kids. And then when someone falls into jeopardy, of course, then we have to do more. But Eric maybe can talk a little bit more about that.
There are a lot of levels and layers to how we as a school and how a school is supposed to respond to youth who are experiencing homeless. The first, I guess, of which, in I want to answer the woman's question in reference to what do we do as a district to make sure that they don't fall through the cracks. First and foremost, the decision was made 2.5 years ago that there was going to be a position slotted for someone doing what I do. That is a big commitment on behalf of a school district. And just coming from a conference in Washington, D.C. of homeless education issues, I can tell you that not all school districts take that very seriously or as seriously as OPS does. Having said that, what we have put in place is a process by which we meet the obligations of the law and try and leave open the question of what other issues remain. McKinney-Vento says that, and that's again the law, that says that a student who is homeless, and in Allison's circumstances, she said couch surfing, that she is considered homeless. But a lot of people won't define her that way or her circumstance that way because she has a place to stay. She's not on the street. So being with a family due to financial circumstances, it renders you essentially homeless as doubled up. And that is the language of the law. Youth also who are unaccompanied youth, that is also language of the law. And Allison's circumstance would have met that criteria as well. The point that was made about kids in and out of agencies, a component of that is youth who are awaiting foster care. So here in Omaha, agencies such as the Child Saving Institute, Heartland Family Services Emergency Shelters, places like that, Project Harmony, some of the youth that they serve, those are youth that are awaiting a long-term placement. So if they are or when they are there, their school remains. The intent of McKinney-Vento is very clear that school access and school stability is maintained. So school of origin is a key component of that. And so it is our charge to make sure that those children and those young adults stay in their school. In order to do that, when we have identified a youth, that youth's name comes to me, and then I work. We have a system established within our district of multiple departments. That information is then given to transportation to make sure that they are obtained or a ride is obtained for them. They are immediately eligible for free lunch, so I have a direct link to nutrition services. I am in contact with the counselors of the elementary and the high schools to make sure that they know, as well as the principals know, this is a young person in your school who is experiencing homelessness. Oftentimes I will have conversations with the families or the agency representatives, and there's an ongoing conversation about, are there other things that perhaps the family needs? During my time, I've been able to establish some relationships with the agencies, the shelters, and that has proved very, very fruitful in our efforts to identify these kids. Alejandro was well hidden. A lot of our youth are. And so to identify those kids that are there, I work with the secretaries, the nurses, the principals, the assistant principals, the counselors, all of those folks, the school nurses, to make sure that we are identifying those kids and that they are enrolled quickly under the charge of the law.
Thank you.
Okay. I have kind of a two-pronged question, and one is, I know the important role that schools play in these children's lives, actually all the children's lives, but school is not in session for actually months at the time in the summer. What happens to those kids then? And the secondary question is, and I'm very concerned in hearing Allison's story, although unfortunately I'm not that surprised, particularly with what we have seen recently with the Safe Haven law. Many of those kids, I see those as potential kids ending up on the street instead. But in particular with the schools, what happens to those kids when school's not in session? And hopefully people like Allison will be brave enough to go to some of those Safe Haven legislative hearings and let them know that it's not just a matter of, gee, is it a three-day-old baby or a 30-day-old baby, but we have, in essence, and I do not use this term in a derogatory way at all, but we have throwaway children out there, and we need to do something for them as well.
It was during the summer where I had stopped going to school. I was contacted by police the following year asking if I was coming back to school, and I said no because I needed to work and focus on where was I going to live, where was I going to sleep that night. So the absenteeism during the summer is where I fell through the cracks and when I dropped out, and I didn't get my GED till I was 18.
I think for younger students, we do have a three-week district summer school program, and that piece could keep children in, as well as another 3 weeks, so it's a six-week summer program, including Title I's program. And I don't think we can forget the work that agencies do in supporting our kids during the summer, whether it's a CLC, obviously Campfire, Girls Inc., Boys and Girls Club, all run summer programs and attach themselves to children throughout the school year and run programs in partnership with schools and sometimes a standalone. So there are, we need more, and we need, you know, extended year programming. If we could afford it, we would certainly be doing it tomorrow. So, you know, we do want the support of the community to you know, do those things. So we have some programming now. It isn't as strong or as, I think, extensive as it could be. And certainly kids will fall through the cracks. And I think particularly those older students, perhaps it happens more regularly with children after the elementary years.
I also went to school in a smaller town that didn't have as many resources as the Omaha school systems might have. When they approached me, they just didn't know what to do, so they actually advised me to drop out.
I have a question for those of you from OPS. I'm just curious about at what point do you feel the obligation to involve Child Protective Services? That's a kind of a thorny issue, I'm sure, and I'm just thinking that Child Protective Services steps in when they deem a situation one of neglect, and do they consider homelessness an instance of neglect?
That is a thorny question, and it's always a difficult piece. And as a principal, I would often call and have a conversation with the crisis line that you call when you are wondering about situations, and people try to wrap their arms around what is the best course of action and how best to help students, and so. We do involve them, obviously, when we need to. I worked with a family where the mom was living in a car, and she had places that the kids slept at night, and then she would bring the children to school every day, in her car that she was living out of, and they got themselves more or less put together at school, our school, and then the other children went to their schools from there. But it is a case-by-case basis, and I think the beauty of schools is that they really, hopefully, and kids have, we have high mobility, so we don't know all the children as well as we would like to. But if you know them, and if you reach out, people will come, and they will accept what you can offer them. And sometimes it's not enough, but it's a place for them to know that their kids are safe. And I think the relationship has, since over the last 15 years when I was in that capacity to work directly with them, I felt that it got better all the time. I feel that, sometimes they have gotten a negative rap on that. I never felt that they weren't willing and able and wanted to do everything they could do, but sometimes, just like the schools, the burden is great, and sometimes there isn't enough of us to go around. So we do, and principals and counselors and nurses constantly are in communication with other agencies. And I've always tried to encourage parents to know to work with people and not have so much fear about what could happen. And I think that's gotten better, too.
Just to add my piece to that, the conversations that I have with school personnel, specifically about those issues, I would say follow are not any different in the criteria or the process or the protocol that is used for traditionally housed kids. It really doesn't follow a different category or a different process because that youth is experiencing homeless. I think that we have to ask more discerning questions in reference to that, but there is really no separate piece of that. And I would just echo exactly what Nancy's points were as well. That dialogue and that relationship with those families is key, and that school is often is that constant. So,
thank you so much to the Youth Task Force for pulling this together, and for Rachel's interest in partnering, and thank you to the panelists. Metro Area Continuum of Care for the Homeless is very concerned about the linkages between service providers and people where they're at, and meeting that need as immediately as possible. One of those things, the obvious thing, is certainly housing with support. Creative, different kinds of housing, not one that fits all. Some of those housing options are in place and some of them aren't. The continuum of care for the homeless is just this. It's a network of very interested and concerned people who've experienced homelessness, providers, government entities, advocates, parents, whoever, interested in preventing homelessness and ending it, for sure. And there really are clear options that end homelessness. that our community is working on. I'm absolutely overwhelmed by the film, and I'm overwhelmed with you, Allison, and your bravery to sit before us and answer questions about your life. And at the risk of doing that again or asking you another, I kind of find it a rare opportunity to have you have a microphone and tell us if you could have asked for what you needed when you were ready and when you needed it and the way you needed it, what would it have been?
Aaron's known for asking loaded questions, Allison. So.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not.
There's a million and five things I could have asked for being homeless. I know a big one was family, because I would go to school and see the family that they have had. But I remember sleeping outside, just thinking, willing to give everything and anything for a coat and a Snickers bar. Hunger, when you're homeless, gets so bad that you're crying in tears from the pain in your stomach. And, well, food pantries have been really great to me. For a week solid, I could only get food pantries with microwavable meals, and, well, there aren't too many of those under bridges.
Another follow-up question. Somehow you got linked with Youth Emergency Services. Was there anything that could have been done more differently, better for you earlier? I mean, so many of the providers and other community advocates are scurrying to do everything that they can do. School systems, everybody trying to do and reach out. At times there's a readiness, and times there aren't readiness opportunities. But if there was an earlier option, is there anything that you could have grabbed onto, either for yourself or for those that stayed with you under the 84th Street Bridge?
I know that for the homeless youth out there, the ability to find the many and great resources that Youth Emergency Services has given me is more difficult. Like I said, the hometown that I came from had little to no resources. They had probably a soup kitchen and a food pantry. And when I moved to Omaha, I was stuck couch surfing and oftentimes sleeping in Jean Leahy Mall, which is not an uncommon occurrence, as most of my friends have spent the night there. To figure out a way that they could find the services and know that they might be out there. Once I did find Youth Emergency Services, they helped me out a great deal, put food in my stomach and counseling, and I was able to talk with their workers. I would say that the youth out there would definitely need to find a way to get to the services much sooner, because I have seen it a couple of times where they got to it too late.
Thank you, and congratulations on your new place.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you all for being here. It's been extremely informative for me just to see everything and to be part of this film and be part of the people here tonight. I guess my question would be, other than being involved with MATCH or being involved with the other services here in town, as a person in this community who feels like this is not a government issue to deal with, it is our issue to become part of, where do we go from there to give you guys support in that, other than, as Americans are fond of throwing money at the problem, because I find myself very much wanting to be involved in that, but you know, in more ways than, you know, I'm not a certified counselor, so I feel helpless in that issue. But, you know, what can we do as individuals, as a community, to gather around you and to give you very specific support to help you guys do your job so much better, to help the school system help those families even more? So that would be
There's always options to volunteer at ODM. Yes House always needs help. Yes House and the Open Door Mission is what ODM and Sienna Francis always have resources of places that need volunteers and help. And there is one, a specific elderly couple that every Sunday drives by the Jean Leahy Mall, which I would like to thank if they're somewhere out there. They drive their own van and cook their own meals and feed as many youth as they can while down there every Sunday.
I would encourage you, all of you that are willing or able to do this, talk to anybody who will listen about this issue. Talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, talk to people that you know in leadership positions anywhere, whether you think it's related to homelessness or not, because as you have said, as Dr. McKeel said, and this continually comes up, this is not a school issue, this is not a government issue, this is not an any certain issue. This is a community issue. This is our issue. And so talk to folks about it. People are often stunned when we say the average age of a homeless person is 9 years old. Really? We don't see kids on the street. No, you don't. You don't see homeless kids on the street because they are living with someone else. They're couch surfing. They're under the bridge, and they're hiding out during the day so they don't get in trouble. They don't often want to be found, either because they don't know that there's something or someone there to help them, or they're not sure where to go. And so just keep talking about this. Talk with your community representatives at every level, church, state, local, all the way up. Keep it on their radar, because this is our issue, and it is going to continue to grow. I guarantee you that. A comment on the numbers issue with regard to that. I felt at the beginning of the school year like I was running faster than I ever had before, and I did a manual count of how many kids, active kids, I was working with at that point, and I think that was somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks into the school year. I had over half as many as we served in the whole school year last year. I had already hit 50% of that number from last year. So our numbers are going up. I think that's because we're identifying more kids, but there's more of them out there. So that's what I would suggest you do. Take information that's out there, take it with you, share it, and talk with folks.
Well, one of the things I'd like to hit on, Lynn Anderson hit on it, is the safe haven issue, because a lot of the kids we see in our juvenile assessment center are dealing with those issues with family. And while people are kind of being real negative about the law that was passed, I actually think we should have been looking at it as a model for the country, because to me this opened up a lot of eyes in our community, or should have, in our state anyway, of what the problem is out there. And so what I'm worried about is we are going to see more homeless kids because they are going to change the law. We know that. They're dead set against, or dead on doing that with this special session. But the issues that the reason that the parents are dropping these kids off and the problems that these youth have that are causing the parents to do this isn't going to go away. And we're going to see more and more of them become homeless if they take that safety net away from the safe haven with the safe haven law.
Thank you. Let's do one final question with Joni. I think we could all be here all night. We've got a great panel and lots of good questions. Obviously, we're stirring up a wonderful discussion. But let's take one more panel or one more question from the audience.
Thank you. I'm not sure if there's anyone in the audience tonight from Health and Human Services, but as Allison pointed out, lots of our youth become homeless because they age out of the foster care system. And I certainly noticed the absence in our panel of an HHS representative. And specifically for Mary Ann, I was wondering the coordination that the county has with HHS, if you could speak to that. And then also certainly for all the other panelists and Katie, you as well, what the involvement is that HHS is taking in the task force in working on aging out, all of those areas?
We actually had HHS workers in our youth facility because of that coordination that takes place between youth and HHS. So we have a real close relationship with them, actually, both at the youth center and at the juvenile assessment center, as well as our ICCU unit through the Region 6 services. So we work in real close. Actually, we do have a close relationship, but the state did take their worker away from us when they made cuts. But the relationship is close. Relationship is still there.
Anybody else want to address that?
I actually brought up the coordination issue of Health and Human Services with foster care folks and those dealing with McKinney-Vento and homeless to some representatives, staffers from Kennedy's office and another senator, Senator Murray. There was a panel discussion in Washington, D.C. at this conference, and I brought up that exact issue. And I did so because coordination between folks who are in the homeless arena and in the foster care arena doesn't happen, in my experience, very easily. In the state of Nebraska, once you are in foster care, if a child is placed in foster care, under the McKinney-Vento law, and the state has directed us accordingly, they are no longer homeless. But what that translates to, unfortunately, is if a school of origin for a student is, let's say, Kellam, and they are then placed in foster care in the home attendance area of a school district that, or a school, excuse me, rather, that is Indian Hill. No, that's about, nah. Okay, I got to pull one out of my head here. If they're with Kellam and then they go to, say,
Mountview.
God, drawing a blank. Because of the foster care parents' address, that is what dictates where they go to school. So by nature of that, that has created another school change for that student. Now, that is a very large and very costly undertaking to deal with that mobility issue within a district, because transportation becomes the biggest issue, and it is expensive. But that is one piece of that. So children awaiting foster care are eligible under McKinney-Vento. Once they are placed in foster care, they are not. And that's, again, part of the semantics and the definition piece that those kids enter in and out of agencies or service lines, but school is always that constant. So it is a very big challenge before us.
Thanks, Eric. One final question. I guess considering the gaps in services, where do we go from here? How do we continue to reduce and eventually eliminate homelessness, and or how do we keep this conversation going?
Continuing to try and branch the gaps between the groups, networking is very important. Situations and events like this need to keep happening so that maybe there's somebody who got a memo about this movie and showed up and didn't know that the Yes House was here or any of the other resources out there, so that they can get connect and know that if they have somebody they can't help, they can find somebody who can.
I agree with Allison that just the continued conversation, because again, we may have known the issues are out there, but we haven't been real good at communicating with one another and coming together and trying to solve the problem. So events like this or other forums, I think, would be a good start.
I think we have to continue to pressure our government. We just need to keep that out in front of people. We need to ask for their assistance in the process as well. It needs to be more than them, and we need to be with them. But I think they need to help figure that out at the state level and the city level, county level.
We need to work together.
I would echo what's already been said and add to it that in keeping it out in the forefront of our minds and in the community, be very, very, very cognizant of the questions that we are asking and the way that we define an issue. And I say issue, not a problem, because sometimes we say homelessness is a problem when there are issues there that need to be worked through. Be aware of the questions that you're asking and make sure that we are evaluating what we are doing and asking, is it relevant, rather than why don't they fit into our whole, our expectations, rather than maybe do we need to change what we're doing. I think that that Allison's situation presents that challenge to us. What do we need to do as a community differently that would have made relevant service for her, rather than saying this isn't what we want it to be. Her situation doesn't fit what we think it should be.
I would like to add, though the movie had a lot of heavy material, I would like everyone here to take one thing to keep in their minds, that the very, very harsh reality of it is that real life as a homeless woman is much, much more violent, a lot more scary, and there are things that you see that should not be seen, and that is why it is so important to get this taken care of.
Thank you, Allison. I want to thank the entire panel, particularly you, Allison. I think it takes a special degree of bravery and courage. I guess we all have our work to do. Hopefully each of us can take something away from this event tonight and assume our social responsibility and helping to reduce and eliminate homelessness. On behalf of the Youth Task Force, I appreciate you coming out.
You've been listening to a panel discussion on youth homelessness, which followed a screening of the 2007 film Chop Shop, directed by Ramin Bahrani. This event was co-sponsored by the Metro Area Continuum of Care for the Homeless Youth Task Force. The members of the panel were Shelley Sides, Youth Street Outreach Coordinator for Youth Emergency Services, Nancy Oberst, Director of Elementary Education for the Omaha Public Schools, Mary Ann Borgeson, Douglas County Commissioner, Eric Steck, Title I Program Resource Facilitator for OPS, and Allison Martin, a formerly homeless youth. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday evening, November 6, 2008, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Casey Logan, and Jim Foyt of FilmStreams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.